you know, if I know I have a problem because I've tested and determined that I've got a problem, I can treat it as soon as it gets to my facility so that it doesn't become a problem later through the facility. So knowing that you have a problem and treating it can help prevent a lot of problems later on.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions from the feed science industry. Please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead of with today's episodes. So today, I'm very happy to have as a guest Eugene Rodberg, who is a senior product manager for Kemin Animal Nutrition and Health. Eugene, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here. And of course, I'm pretty sure the audience will be very eager to learn a little bit about your technical expertise, the things that you guys do at Kemin. So with that, why don't we just start a little bit with just kind of introducing yourself and tell us a little bit what you do. And of course, tell us a little bit about Kemin so our audience worldwide can identify it.
So thank you for having us on the program. We appreciate the time to share the Kemin story. Kemin has been a pioneer in the grain treatment, forage treatment, and in the mycotoxin space for many years. I came to Kemin 13 years ago to head up our grain treatment business, and in addition, the forage business. We have a whole line of different products that we offer to the industry that help to reduce the spoilage loss from forages that are in storage. Also, when it comes to feeding total mixed rations, we've got interventions that can help preserve the quality for that. But today we're really talking about our grain treatment and all of the things that we do surrounding improving the quality of the corn, improving the quality of the feed ingredients that are going into livestock rations, both here and around the world.
Great. This is a very important topic overall that as our audience worldwide understands and, of course, focus on feed, but we all know that also grain gets used in other processing industries. But let's focus on feed for this particular podcast. But let's talk a little bit about that. You know, one of the key things that we see overall is seasonal molds, and then, of course, the never-ending story about concerns and issues about market toxins. So why don't we just start a little bit what you're seeing right now and what are the approaches that from your expertise and technical skills will tell somebody that is seeing that what to expect, what to do about it overall to avoid having any particular feed quality loss.
So this year is a bit unique in that in prior years, at least the last 3 years, we've had really dry, droughty growing conditions in the upper Midwest and throughout much of the corn growing region. This year, it seems like the faucet won't turn off. And in addition, we've had conditions that are really, really conducive for mold and other types of conditions on the crop. Right now, when we're doing this podcast, we're just now getting to the point where producers are getting into the field, doing their crop scouting, and really determining what's happening. And two things that we're already seeing from the crop scouts that have been out there. Number one is tar spot. And that's been a discussion throughout most of the Eastern Corn Belt, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and tar spot's even now getting into Iowa, into that corn growing region. So that's something that's going to perform, have yield drag. It won't impact the quality of the grain like other diseases that we have, but it is going to impact the yield that we're going to see from the crop. The other thing that producers are beginning to talk about is fusarium mold. Hot, wet conditions are conducive to fusarium mold, which leads to gibberellic ear rot in the crop. And what causes what that leads to is mycotoxin levels, especially DON, that are going to be fairly high. So we'll learn more as producers and agronomists get into the field and really begin to do the crop scouting. But right now, it's an opportunity for producers to look at some of their foliar programs, foliar applied fungicides, to really reduce the opportunities for those non-beneficial populations to establish themselves. And I'm not an agronomist, so I don't know all the different technologies that are out there from a chemistry standpoint. But working with your agronomist, you can really nip it in the bud right now by applying foliar applied products and really taking care of the problem.
You already know that the key to a profitable operation is healthy, productive animals. This starts with the quality and safety of your production inputs. Our team of experts at Kemin are driven by curiosity to develop science-backed ingredients and solutions to help you maintain feed and water quality, improve intestinal health, optimize nutrition, and eliminate pathogens. Learn more today by diving in at kemin.com/AG.
Great. No, this is very important information. And before we continue on that, for our audience, please comment if you have any questions. So Gene, well, as we know, you know, here in Kansas where I'm located, maybe not that same way like in the Eastern Corn Belt, but here being on the west side, as you may know, we have very like drought-driven, you know, conditions for the last years, and has caused a lot of issues around here. And now, like you said, you know, it's been raining quite a lot, which is for us here, it's a little bit kind of, we got used to it not having that, but that causes a lot of issues from that on the mold. So, based on that, you talk about fusarium molds, and of course, that mainly on DON or bombotoxin, some people call them. But can you just tell us a little bit then, what do you, besides on the agronomy perspective, you know, after we hit harvest later in the fall, what will that mean for producers? What they should be doing in terms of being able to quantify all these issues coming into the grain, you know, to avoid having problems later on in the rest of the supply chain?
That's, again, where the producer who buys the corn from the corn grower really doesn't have a great opportunity to impact that corn quality. You know, the grower is the one who you know, has an opportunity to apply some of these chemistries to, as I said, nip it in the bud. But once the crop has established itself, and now we're done with silking, really the crop has established itself that we're going to inherit in the livestock business what the producers grew in the field. And so the first time we really have a chance to impact the quality of that grain is when we purchase it from the grain producer. And at that point, there are different products like mold inhibitors, mycotoxin binders, if I can say that phrase, you know, flow agents that are out there that will help us to reduce some of the non-beneficial things that are going to occur from that crop. So applying a mold inhibitor as soon as that corn arrives at your facility helps to improve that quality as it moves through your facility, as it moves through your value chain. And so now you don't have the opportunity for additional mold growth, which can lead to additional mycotoxin formation. Getting to the mycotoxin side of it, the best advice I can give is test, test, and test again. Until you know what you have, and testing will help you determine what you have. You know, knowing which program to pull together for treating the mycotoxin or putting some kind of a prevention program together, until you know what you have, it's really, really tough. And so there are a lot of companies out there that offer mycotoxin testing as part of their platforms. Kemin has a mycotoxin testing program where if a customer is a customer of Kemin and you send in a sample of corn, or distiller grains, or whatever commodity you're looking at, we can test that and determine the level of mycotoxin, the types of mycotoxins, and then we can offer an intervention program that will help ensure good performance of your animals down the line. You know, with fusarium mold, fusarium mold's a tricky one because it will produce several different mycotoxins depending on the challenge that that fusarium mold has. So we talk about the key mycotoxins being DON or vomitoxin, like we mentioned. Another one is zearalenone. Zearalenone is a mycotoxin produced by fusarium mold that has physical characteristics or molecular characteristics that look like estrogen. So here's zearalenone getting into the circulating tissues, and now the animal will think she's pregnant. And so now we have all kinds of reproductive issues with zearalenone. Another one is T2 toxin. T2 toxin is actually a toxin that causes mouth lesions in poultry. And so we see this very, very often in birds where they're fast growing and they're good looking, but they've got these crusties around the beak. That's caused by T2 toxin. So that's an issue that we have there. And then the final toxin is one, fumonisin. Fusarium mold will lead to fumonisin. And in sows and in horses, that's an issue when we're talking about their efficiency. And fumonisin is actually a toxin to horses. It causes a disease condition called leukoencephalomalacia. So it's really something that we don't want to expose the animals to. And again, once we know what we have, you can work with your vendors and your suppliers to determine what interventions they have that can help control that.
Great. No, this is a very, very good information. And for our audience, please like us. Give us the famous thumbs up there for today's podcast. Eugene, you say several things that hit my mind that I see there. I had the opportunity to visit many feed mills and grain elevators, both domestic and international. But a key word, sampling. You know, it's something that you don't see it done on a regular basis sometimes or constant. And I think that at the end of the day, sampling is an issue because you might not hit the right place on mycotoxin. So based on that, a couple of things that I wanted to maybe discuss a little bit is what would you talk a little bit more in depth about how mycotoxins are spread in the grain, you know, so people can understand the importance of sampling. And then, of course, what would you recommend somebody to say, hey, how many samples should I get per truck or per bin or something around those lines? I know there's many different schemes out there, but it's something that I have a little bit of a heart to also talking about sampling. So if you don't mind kind of hitting those spots, that'll be great.
Yep. And I'm not a true expert on sampling. I just know enough to be able to, I think I do it properly. And it's really about getting as many different points in the grain mass or in the commodity to get a representative sample of what it is. So if you get a truckload of whatever delivered, let's say it's distiller grains, and you get a truckload of that delivered, okay, that's 20 tons of product in that truckload. And to try to get a representative sample, you need to take, at least 10, 12 probes in the truck from various different points to get a representative sample. And then once you have those representative samples, mix it together. So we mix all those different samples together. And then once we get that sample pulled together, the consolidated sample, then we can take a single sample from that to send it to the laboratory. Or even better yet would be to take multiple samples from that same truck and send those in. But yeah, if you're sending in one sample from every single truckload and you've taken one probe of that truckload, you have not had a homogeneous mix of what you're trying to get accomplished. And so often we're making decisions. I work in the silage space and we'll have producers and it causes me to cringe when we see this, but they'll walk up to the face of the silage pile, which first off, Keith Bolson at Kansas State University would have, the late Keith Bolson would have cringed at people that do that. They take a grab sample from the face of the silo and they send it in and say, that's the representation of this entire mass of silage. We do the same thing in the grain market. And so the more samples, the more probes we can put into whatever sample we're taking, the better we have a chance of determining what we really have as our problem.
And I agree with that. You know, the more samples, the better. I understand sometimes logistically that's hard, the cost and everything. But at the end of the day, it is better to know what you get, like you said, prevent further in the supply chain instead of just facing all those issues that later you could have at the animal production side. So, and that brings me a little bit of maybe a couple of things first that you talk about zearalenone and last time I checked here and for the US FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, there's no really guidelines or action levels on it. And so I get all these questions, and I know that in the European Union, South America, and Brazil specifically, they do have some levels based on the conditions that they see. But what would you recommend for somebody to think about? I know it depends on what species you're feeding and their stage, but an idea to talk a bit more in depth about sirolimus, because not a lot of people touch base on those, and I think they're very important to know.
And I guess I would refer more to some of the experts with the level of what causes the issues. I'm not fully versed in which levels cause issues, but that's a situation where you have a problem that you know what it's going to do. You know, in dairy cattle, it's going to be something that's going to impact our reproductive performance. So keep it out of your breeding herd. You know that it's going to impact sow performance. So that's definitely a place where you don't want to put it in your gilts and your sows. So keep it out of those types of rations. If we can mix it with other feeds that we know are clean, we can reduce that amount of total zearalenone in that. But targeting the species, targeting the phase with the feed grain, so you know, okay, this particular feed is going to be a problem, and it's got, let's say, 100 parts per million of zearalenone in it. Okay, I would never, ever feed that to a sow. Once I get to that 100 parts per million threshold, that's really feed that needs to go to non-breeding animals so that you're going to have less impact. Now, there's also the coal combination, where a lot of times when we have DON and zearalenone together, it is a 1+1=3 sort of situation because of the gut distress that occurs because of DON. And from a gut health standpoint, DON is something that you need to be concerned about. So now zearalenone can go systemic easier when you've got the other intestinal distresses. So the combination of multiple mycotoxins is something to consider when you're designing your program also.
Great, perfect. And of course, for our audience, please leave us a comment if you'd like to know more about a specific topic that we're talking about today. We'll make sure to send them to Eugene and his team for further answers. So as we continue, you have said several things about how can a livestock producer can reduce molds and mycotoxins, but to kind of give it a little bit of a step by step, and I had to put my engineer hat on it, what would you tell a livestock producer to look to be able to reduce the risk of mold contamination and, of course, in their grain and feed? And then based on that, what steps do you follow in that?
Great question, because I get this a lot when I'm working with producers at their facilities. And step number one is always early is better. So as soon as I have a new ingredient coming in, whether that's grain, whether that's soybean meal, whether that is distiller grains, whether that is, you know, the wheat mids, if I know I have a problem because I've tested and determined that I've got a problem, I can treat it as soon as it gets to my facility so that it doesn't become a problem later through the facility. So knowing that you have a problem and treating it can help prevent a lot of problems later on. The other thing to look at is the continual buildup of mold inside your facility is something you have to address if you want to keep it under control. So sanitation programs where you're running feed flushes through, adding mold inhibitor to corn at a fairly high rate of mold inhibitor. Let's say you're going to put in 10 pounds per ton of a mold inhibitor, run 500 pounds of corn through the facility to flush out all the mold, and then take that flush and throw it away. Don't use it in subsequent batches of feed, but use that flush as an opportunity to clean out your feed mill. And you know, universities have been doing research on this. I know there's some really good research out of Kansas State where they have shown the benefit of using a feed flush program. The other thing is just sanitation. You're cleaning out boots, cleaning out drags, mixer sanitation, you know, getting in there and especially if you're making stickier feeds on a dairy where you have high molasses feed, if you're not in there at least once a week to remove all of the crud that builds up on the surfaces, yeah. Not only are you impacting your mixing efficiency and having your CVs go, or your coefficient of variation, your non-homogeneity increasing of your feed, you're also allowing a substrate to exist that can grow mold. And so getting into the feed mill, getting into the mixer with proper lockout, tagout, we don't want any injuries, getting in there and making sure you have a good hygiene program. And then in the final step is when the feed is delivered, again, how often are we cleaning the boots out from our grain bins at the farm? You know, we've got these opportunities for mold to grow inside of the facilities. The barns are great environments and the houses are great environments for the growth of mold. How often are we cleaning out our feeders? How often are we cleaning out our feed lines? Well, what's our program to make sure we have sanitation throughout the whole system? So mold is one of those things we don't think about it until we have a problem. But it's one of those preventative maintenance steps that every feed mill needs to look at. So when we go into a feed mill as Kemen employees, we're helping the customer look for critical control points where mold can accumulate. And so our audit sheets talk about, you know, drags, they talk about conveyors, they talk about boots, they talk about, all the things that are related to the mixer. So it's a holistic approach that we're looking at, but it's something that you constantly have to be vigilant if you want to keep mold out of your facilities.
Great. No, this is great, excellent information. And I feel sometimes, you know, as I visit also feed mills, that people don't pay attention to mold and they don't know the big issue that it can become overall from a feed safety component, from a, like you said, a loss of mixing uniformity, many things that can create issues overall, compaction in your silos, in your hoppers. I mean, it's just overall a world that sometimes is hard. And of course, cleaning application of mold inhibitors helps. And that's definitely a key thing to understand from a feed mill management perspective. So based on that, for our audience, of course, can you explain a little bit how mold inhibitor works and the different things that you see there in terms of products out there, you know, like you guys have, so our audience can understand a little bit more in depth? Because I do see sometimes lack of knowledge depending on the markets where you're trying to talk about storage overall.
Yep. And getting back to your point about the mycotoxins, you know, the first thing that producers often think about is mycotoxins because that's what they hear all the time. There's many companies that sell products, and Kemen has a product that is a mycotoxin mitigant. But the challenge that you have is that most people don't think about the mold because, well, mold exists and there's nothing I can really do about it. And that's a defeatist attitude that I think a lot of times we need to address and go back and realize that mold leads to mycotoxins. So if I can prevent the mold from growing, now I'm going to have fewer mycotoxins. And, you know, organic acids, like what Kemen, so Kemen has a line of different organic acid blends. And the mode of action of an organic acid is very simple. It gets into the mold cell, passively diffuses across the barrier, gets into the mitochondria, into the energy center, if you will, of the mold cell, and disrupts the multiplication of the mold. After it's been disrupted long enough, the mold eventually depletes itself and dies. So now you end up with a mold that's not going to grow anymore. And in addition, it's going to clean up the environment by preventing the mold from growing. And organic acids, we've known this since the 70s, how organic acids work to disrupt the metabolism of mold cells and yeast cells, or wild yeast strains, to help to prevent them from growing and multiplying. So again, the whole Kemen program is based off of different concentrations of organic acids to address different problems. We've got a line of organic acids that are specifically designed for corn soy diets. We've got a line that's designed for TMRs. And of course, we have products that are going to be somewhere in between for those producers that have commodities that are coming in, you know, corn gluten that they need to treat, that they know may or may not have a problem. And the other thing too is when you're working with some high moisture ingredients, you know, that's the beauty of our product line is we've had experience over the years with dose titrations so we can dial in the dose depending on the moisture level. And so if you have a really high moisture product, we've got a matrix that we talk about and we'll share with customers that really dial in, hey, here's the dose that you need to be using to have the best chance for success.
So that's perfect to know. So that for our audience, that it just depends on what are you making feed of it? What are you going to get recommend on the recommendation side? And then, of course, the matrix of depending on your moisture content, you have it. And I think people don't think about those, but they do have a reason why you guys are doing from a technical perspective. So for our audience, please visit our site, wisenetics.com, and learn more about all of the other podcast segments like we have. Poultry, swine, dairy, beef, and of course, pet food. And yes, this one too, the Feed Science Hub podcast. Eugene, as we're coming a little bit to the end of the of this podcast, but before we kind of finish off, but very important, I think that's a question that our audience that uses mold inhibitors. What do you think about the issue of, you know, which scares sometimes people, applying acids to grain using combine equipment, metal equipment? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, and you know, a lot of the archival bad press that mold inhibitors get is because grandpa used a mold inhibitor that wasn't buffered. And my dad is one who, you know, for years, they would use straight propionic acid on everything. And, you know, it rusted the balers. It caused all kinds of issues. Well, Chemin Technology was the pioneer in developing buffered organic acids. And buffered organic acids are much less corrosive. They're still semi-corrosive, but hugely less corrosive than straight propionic acid that your grandpa used. The other thing that we work with is we have a team of engineers at Chemin that designs equipment that applies the mold inhibitor or implies whatever product you're looking for, specifically where it needs to be applied for maximum efficacy, for maximum dispersion, but also for minimizing the amount of overspray that occurs. And so there are really good engineering firms out there that can design equipment that targets the feed and doesn't target the facility. And so finding the right company that can design equipment so that the product gets applied correctly will help reduce all those corrosion issues. There again, lots of companies out there that make really, really good products. Again, Chemin, we know our products, so our internal engineers, they do a really good job with designing and basically installing the equipment and of course, maintaining it. You know, the best equipment in the world doesn't work if it's not maintained. So, the buffering of organic acids really, really reduced the corrosive issues that we faced, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, and even in the 90s.
And that's very good information because there's all around the world, there's different brands and you know, some people just, like you said, just directly propionic acid and they start seeing corrosion, especially in tropical weather locations. But the key word is buffer organic acid. So with that, thank you. You know, that's something that I think is very important from a technical perspective for feed millers and other commodity groups, rice, wheat millers to understand and other grain processing. So
it's time for our famous three.
Unfortunately, we're running here out of time, and this is great information. But Eugene, before you leave, we always like to ask our guest, what will be your favorite book or resource that you will recommend somebody that might not have that technical background to learn more about overall, we could say molds, mycotoxins, organic acids, mold inhibitors, just overall to understand that. What would be one or two options that you might have in your mind right now?
Yeah. So from, you know, my favorite reference book is still Dr. Diaz's Blue Book of Mycotoxins. That book is a tremendous resource for me. I should have brought a copy with me here, but the Blue Book of Mycotoxins is out of publication now, but you can still get copies I bought one on eBay not too far long ago.
Really?
and so I share that with new hires just to bring them up to speed with what is going on. But yeah, Dr. Diaz did a phenomenal job of consolidating all the known information back. I think he wrote it in the early 2000s. So phenomenal resource, the Blue Book of Mycotoxins, a book I highly recommend.
And I actually am taking notes because I'm going to go get it. I don't have a copy or heard about it, but if you say, I'm going to go look for it.
Yep.
Thank you. And then besides that, like what would be something that you will recommend as a favorite book or resources outside of this field of expertise that might help a young professional or somebody that is trying to make their career overall better? Something more, think about life itself.
Yeah. So I Winston Churchill is probably one of the best leaders, and whether you like his politics or not, the man knew how to lead people and how to mobilize a population. And so, The Last Lion is one of the books that was really, really good that was on Winston Churchill. Actually, behind me, I've got Never Surrender, which was John Kelly's book on Winston Churchill. Along with Germs, Guns, and Steel, which I also recommend everyone read. That book is a phenomenal resource. So, and I keep them close by because they're books that I constantly will go back to and reference. So, yeah, I highly recommend learn what you can about Winston Churchill. It's a great leader to emulate and to look at in whatever area you're talking about.
Great. No, I smile because he's actually one of my favorite leaders overall what he did. And I actually, even with my kids, I bought them a little book, and I remember who wrote it, but with cartoons about Winston Churchill, just to imply that they're young, but at least they could get in their mind. So thank you for that recommendation. In your opinion, what will set the difference from a young to be successful as a professional compared to somebody that might not be? More a recommendation for those young professionals, besides the books and the reference, but what would you tell somebody like in Kemen or family just to see to become better professional overall?
So this was a piece of advice I got when I first started in sales, and it applies to everything. And it was a guy named Carl Nolan. Carl worked for Iowa Veterinary Supply at the time. And he said, there are two things that will make you successful: show up and follow up. Be there, understand the customer's problem, work with them to determine what's the best solution, and then follow up. So much of what is the problem in sales, in marketing, in technical services, is we understand the problem and then we never come back to the customer to tell them, here's the solution. And oh, by the way, how did that work? What can we do different? So show up and follow up. Those would be my two pieces of advice.
That's fantastic. And so with that, Eugene, thank you very much for all this great information and sharing your own recommendations for personal growth. We really appreciate that overall with that.
And also, I mentioned very quickly, if you need more information, always go to kemen.com/ag. We have all kinds of resources online available for you to utilize.
Of course, and also that includes everything related to mole inhibitors and the other products that you guys have. So thank you for bringing that up. That's always very important, especially for people to want to learn a little bit more about it. So with that, Eugene, thank you very much. This concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable to us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, from the Feed Science Podcast, signing off. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.